This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rima.
And I'm Paik.
And this is Strange Indeed, a podcast dedicated to the Netflix show Black Mirror.
This week, we are covering Season 6, Episode 2, titled Lock Henry.
This was a doozy. I enjoyed it this week. What did you think, yes. Paik? General thoughts?
I do. I really like this one. I'm sure I will talk about it. Hopefully, we don't have too many listeners that fall in the camp of... I know we talked about it a little bit last week that there's some people complaining about these episodes not being Black Mirror enough or whatever. And I have some thoughts to defend and counteract that for sure.
Oh, good. Me too. Yeah.
So, hopefully, you know, we don't have too many people in that camp. But yeah, I think this was very well done. Again, we talked about... I mean, this is about... society and people and kind of how they react within the confines of, you know, the technology of the through line. And I think it was done very well. There's always the social commentary. There's a good twist. I'm sure some people probably picked up on the twist better than I did or sooner than I did, but I don't know. But I thought it was really great. There was some really great horror aspects to it. Some good comedy, some good, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. It felt kind of like a true crime or a mystery thing where you're waiting to see what's going to happen and you're trying to guess before things happen. So I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, I'm really happy to hear that. Cause I did enjoy it too, because I know I've mentioned it multiple times here on the podcast. I do enjoy a good true crime story, you know, podcasts or documentaries. I do try to steer towards ones that really do kind of focus on victims, because I feel like in some things victims get lost. So I do try to, you know, stick to, you know, I kind of pick and choose. So I'm a fan. So when this started, and I was watching it in the dark, and I was like, oh, that was a mistake, because it was a little scary. But yeah, I enjoyed it too. I thought it was, you know, had some good twists and turns. I didn't see it coming either. I'm like, oh. Darn, I should have got that, but I enjoyed where the story, you know, took us, and you know, I have some things to say too. I'm going to defend it. I want to be clear. I'm not going to try and like, you know, this isn't about, you know, well, you're wrong for your opinion or anything like that. But I do want to defend, you know, as far as like where this episode falls and some of the folks that don't feel, you know, like it's a Black Mirror episode or. You know, or it was too predictable, I guess, too. So that's awesome. Glad we're on the same page. I feel like I won't have to defend it to you, Paik. just All right. Well, let's go ahead. I know I'm sure we've got a lot to talk about because this one was a really fascinating story, I thought. So where do you want to kick us off tonight?
I'm going to start with something very quick, very small. I'm just going to point out maybe my favorite character in the episode I had the most fun with, and that is Stuart King. The man who is running seemingly the only business still in town. You know, Davis's old buddy, Podrick Payne, there running the bar.
Wasn't that awesome?
That's pretty cool.
See him again? Yeah.
That's where he went. but yeah, but this is where Podrick went after everything happened. He's running a bar. But yeah, he's very kind of rugged personality. You know, he's making a lot of jokes, you know, about, you know, oh, you're going to tell me your pronouns and, you know, went to some woke film school. And he's just doing, you know, all of his, you know, like kind of, you know, rugged and he's joking at them and kind of pointing at their kind of hipstery liberalness, you know, in a friendly, joking way, though. You know, you can tell as he warm up to the character as they do. You know, at least as Pia does, because, you know, Davis and him go way back. But it's just like, oh, he's charming in that once you get to know him kind of way.
Yeah. He's definitely ribbing on him like only a really old, good friend can.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. It's great.
And then he just cracks me up through the whole episode. Like, yeah, like there's some tension, you know, between him and his dad. Like, we don't get any explanation really as to why their relationship is the way it is, other than, like, you know, his dad, which John Hannah, by the way.
Incredible. Yeah. Love him.
You know, has just kind of gone on this like bender of just drinking all day, every day. And clearly he's not a fan of that. And so we just see them like butt heads. Like they just don't get along. He's just going to trash talk his dad and call him out. And we don't really get any further explanations or clearance on any of that. And that's okay, because that's not important. But it just adds to that level of the character. But himself definitely had some of the lines that cracked me up the most throughout this episode. And it's just very like dry, the way he just dryly delivers things. You know, Davis is telling Pia the story of Ian Adair and all this stuff that happens, and he just goes, "Total wipeout, farm aside." And I'm like,
I'm like, okay, that's a new one.
Farm aside, I like that. Of course, the best one, the one that, like, even on first watch, like, you have to like pause because I'm laughing for a second, is when they're breaking into the cottage there, and he's like, "Can you do that quieter?" And he's just like, "I'll put the crowbar on whisper mode." just cracks me up. But yeah, the only other thing I guess I'll talk about is, you know, Davis is kind of weary or against the idea of this documentary at first, and he's worried how his mom's going to take it, and you clearly see Stuart's dad, Richard, is very against the idea, but Stuart super into the idea from the get-go, and immediately, because his thought, tourism, you know, we're gonna show the beauty of the area in these shots with voiceovers, and we get the true crime crowd in, we get these people seeing what the area is like, which I thought was interesting when he's talking about that, because he mentions Netflix by name when he says, "Remember that thing on Netflix?"
And
I was like, so now we know that, because we know that Locke Henry then ends up on Streamberry, so I'm like, well, they both exist in the same universe then, I guess.
That was not that was unexpected. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, so then his whole goal is just tourism, and then we see at the end of the episode, the pub is packed full of people watching the BAFTA Awards, so it worked. We got a bunch of people back in Locke Henry, and Stuart's got actual patrons at his bar, at his pub, that he can serve now.
Yeah, he got a happy ending, I think, in the story.
Maybe the only one.
The only one, yeah. Just to get her to say the same thing, only one. Yeah, that's great. I liked his character, too. It was a nice surprise. It took me a hot minute to recognize him out of, like, Game of Thrones, like, wardrobe. But yeah, it was good to see him again, because I haven't seen him in anything since. I think he's done other things, but I haven't seen him, so I enjoyed his character too. I enjoyed his infusion of humor into this dark, twisty episode, and really enjoyed seeing him. So
yeah,
I agree with you.
And he was kind of the true crime fan, like, personified in the episode, where, like, even the most, like, horrifying details and things that they find out, he's cracking jokes about it and being like, oh yeah, like, he's excited about the most, like, terrifying things. And I think it was, like, purposely he kind of portrayed the viewer a little bit, the people who are very into, like, true crime stuff and very into, you know, where you kind of take joy or entertainment at some of these things that should be very appalling, but you're like, oh, it's entertainment. And he was very entertained by a lot of things.
I agree. I do believe that was intentional. Well, you know, we talked about, you know, this story and the twist, and I didn't see it coming when it started. You know, I first thought, you know, we're getting, you know, some great, like, a great backdrop, right? This Locke Henry was beautiful. So I was really captivated by that. But then whenever they jumped in, you know, when they're at the pub and, you know, Stuart starts talking about the story, and then you know, him and Davis are going back and forth, like, let me tell it, or sorry, forget about what I just said and go ahead. And, you know, how they're both kind of chiming in with the story. I was really captivated, and I was like, ooh, this is juicy. And then it got kind of scary. Mm-hmm. And then I was regretting the choice of watching it in the dark, like I said. But I thought it was great, and I was really swept in. But then it ended so tragically, you know, like the whole story in of itself. And I know I'm jumping like way ahead, but you know, I don't want to recap the whole story. I mean, we know what happened, right? Like yeah. they're saying, you know,
if somebody's listening
to
this, they watched the episode. I know.
Yeah.
So
you should know what happened in the episode, but yes, we've got the whole story of how it was, you know, it was supposed to be Ian that murdered the tourists. And then, you know, it came out with all of this that it was, you know, also Dave's parents, and it wasn't really Ian leading. It was them kind of guiding him, because they even said, I don't remember Stuart's exact words, but he was a bit of a follower, you know, mm-hmm. he was easily guided or something, I think is how he said it, and seemed to be pretty true, because they kind of led him into this whole, you know, kidnapping and torturing people. So it was interesting to get these further details of how they were the ones that kind of spearheaded it. And it was interesting how I felt like, did you feel like Stuart's dad, Mr. King, was kind of a bit of a red herring, you know, because he had this, I don't know, he just seemed like he knows more than what he's telling, mm-hmm. or he was maybe involved somehow or something. I feel like they were trying to kind of give that kind of vibe.
They could have. I'm sure that there are people who were led down that road to think, oh, it's John Hannah. You know, so like the casting, mm-hmm. versus, you know, like the secrecy or kind of weirdness of the character. I'll be honest, I never really thought that he was involved that much more. Like, I never was led down that path. I really wasn't sure. My first watch, I really wasn't sure at all. I wasn't led down any like red herring paths. It just all kind of hit me.
I
was like,
either.
Wait, what? Yeah.
No, I was too. I was like, when Pia was in the bedroom and the tape is playing, you know, she's kind of mm-hmm. going over what they had filmed that day. And, you know, she's doing her little stretching. She's got her back turned towards the computer. And then when the tape kind of switches, you mm-hmm. know, there's that Bergerac, you know, show, but then it switches. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And it still even took me a minute, like, wait, what? You know, how did this come to be in the possession of his mother and you know, Davis's parents' house? Still took me a minute. And so yeah, it totally got me, and mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I can't believe I didn't pick up on that. But you know, it didn't, and I was like, oh, this is twisted. So it was, I loved the twist. And I liked how they told the story. You know, I like how they just got straight to like what happened. Like, and it makes you think of questions like, well, what if it had been the opposite? What if the truth didn't come out? What if Davis and Pia had lived different lives and had made that Eggman documentary, you know, like Davis had wanted? So it makes me question things like that. Like, what if they decided not to, you know, let's sacrifice the fame to go after this more niche audience. Cause you know, Pia's like, you know, you're going to get this documentary in front of maybe 12 nerdy, you know, types that, you know, and it's going to show and be something like an independent thing. And, you know, he didn't seem to care about that, but what if that is what they went for? And like talking about Pia, you know, she was so, I don't want to say fame hungry, but I felt like they were trying to, like, I know her death was accidental. I mean, it was caused initially because of Janet chasing her down. But it was kind of, I thought, almost like a punishment for her to try to take this content from her boyfriend's family, from this tragedy that, you know, of his family, like before they even knew the truth of what happened. I don't know if anyone else felt that way, but it was almost like kind of her karma a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I loved the whole ending where we have Davis who, you know, he's trying to do something interesting with his pursuit of, you know, this documentary filmmaking, and he ends up getting like way more than what he expected and learns the full like context of how he was brought up and who brought him up, right? Yeah. Like who his parents really were, and thinking about how he has to live with that. And I don't know. It's like, I don't know. I'm trying to articulate what I want to say, because it's like he's having to deal with like who his parents really were and almost kind of having to separate that a little bit. But then he's also got, after all of that, he's still kind of left with that note that his mom left him. Like, you know, like, how do you reconcile that? You know, that this reminder that she was this murdering sadist, but still cared about him and his success enough to leave him all of these like trophies of their murders, all of the tapes, essentially his whole confession, and then to like leave him this note of, you know, for your movie, you know, love mom, you know, you know, how do you compartmentalize that and have like love for your parents, you know, that were people who, you know, tortured and murdered people and were responsible for these things and raised you.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, it was all these things kind of wrapped up there in the ending with where Davis was at by the end at the BAFTAs. I don't know. What do you have thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. So I can, that's one of my points. I'll talk about the aftermath a little bit. Yeah. Because it's definitely, these complex feelings about his parents, but I think there definitely is more of that too. So we see it being up for and winning the BAFTA, running against a documentary series titled Euthanasia Inside Project Junipero. They beat them. Thought that was a fun little nod, a little Easter egg. I have a couple of notes before I get to what I think, but listen, that I just want to throw in. I noted the post-production team on the Lock Henry series was named Cart Before Horse, which I thought was really funny, because, you know, it's just a little play on the idea, because, they started filming the documentary, and then the hook, so to speak, was found later, so, you know, a little cart before horse in the way that things were done. So Davis is not celebrating his victory here at the end. I think, like you said, there's the shame of the truth of his parents, but also the fact that shame is just now the hottest gossip and entertainment. You know, people are partying there at the pub in Lock Henry wearing masks and trivializing the entire thing. They're talking about making a scripted TV show based off all of it. And so now his horrific reality is the biggest water cooler talking point across the world right now. And he's miserable with that. And so I think that's another point that this episode is trying to make. Is, you know, true crime, you know, that this whole true crime idea, which I know you're a fan, I'm really not, but it's not that I have anything like morally against it. And that's what's interesting, because I don't know, you know, there's an argument or a commentary that this episode is making, but I think it's kind of, you know, where do you want to look at that? Because again, that's, you know, we may have people complaining, oh, it's not Black Mirror enough, you know, technology's not bad at ruining things. But I mean, again, we talked about this last week, Liz, it's never really what this show was about. Technology is a common through line, but it doesn't have to be futuristic. You know, we have the cameras, the tapes, they're streaming a true crime documentary series on Streamberry. It's all technology. And the point of the show is how society takes that thing and becomes the villain within it. And so the spectacle of the events in Lock Henry, I think, are the culprit here. You know, with Davis being miserable, watching the world consume all the truth of his parents and the celebrity and the gossip of these horrific things that happen to real people and how those become entertainment and gossip and talk. And, you know, it made me think of Dahmer, the series on Netflix, and how huge of a hit that was. And but the families of the actual victims suffered to differing degrees because of the success of that series and seeing themselves portrayed and their family portrayed and things portrayed in certain ways. I think that's kind of maybe where they're going with this a little bit. They even show that with Richard, John Hannah's character, being against it. You know, after all this time, is he just wanting to let it go, or does he fear that Davis is going to, you know, discover the truth somehow? But then again, that commentary, he calls Davis a parasite. He, you know, he's dragging up the past for new glory. And you think about true crimes, like, we all watch this stuff for entertainment. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, on the flip side of the Dahmer thing, I think of also Unsolved Mysteries, right? Where because of episodes of that show, they have actually led to breaks and, you know, new breaks in cases and justice being served in ways that we never thought was possible.
Right.
So I'm not exactly sure where I land on that, you know, because it can be good and it can be educational and helpful at times. But there's definitely, in the true crime genre and the grand, you know, spectrum that it is, there is a line that can be crossed and is crossed at certain times where you're just glorifying things that happened versus actually helping the situation or the victims or anything like that. So it's a very touchy subject that I really don't know where I feel on it. And I don't, there's commentary in this episode on it, but yeah, it's just almost to kind of get the conversation started. I don't even know if this episode is coming down hard directly on one side or the other either.
I don't think I think they touched on it there at the end, like you said, mm-hmm. with the group that was at the pub watching the BAFTAs. I think that they were starting to go there, but I don't think this episode came down very hard and showed the like a bigger picture.
Yeah.
Of what you were just talking about. Yeah. Good point. Did you have more that you want to say about that?
No, that's pretty much it. Okay. Yeah, that just kind of is as a point was just like the aftermath and kind of the commentary on true crime and kind of, okay, I think what was at the center of this episode, aside from, you know, the entertainment of the story that's in it. But, you know, what's the underlying theme? What's the commentary mm-hmm. they're making here?
Okay, great. I didn't want to trample and jump in if you mm-hmm. still had something to say. I'm going to add to that because I think just a little piece of what you were talking about, because I was kind of surprised that when we learn that it's essentially a ghost town because of the murder, I was surprised that it wasn't already like a touristy kind of location or site. Like maybe it was then, like when in the 90s when we get these flashbacks and when it was happening, but then why didn't it still continue to be? Because I don't know. The only thing I could think was like, to me, it seems like it would still be a tourist attraction because of what happened, not the opposite. Like it wouldn't have made it be a ghost town because of it. It would have been so sensationalized that it would still be a tourist attraction, and maybe not for all the right reasons, but it would be because of that.
Yeah.
And so for me, that didn't quite add up.
Yeah. I was confused about that as well. Cause if the true crime fanatics and stuff, even if it's just a story that was just not told, that people didn't know about, which I think is what they're mm-hmm. talking about, you know, that, you know, oh, and then Princess Diana died and then everything moved on and nobody cared anymore. And mm-hmm. so maybe that's what it is that the people who would use it as a tourist attraction for those reasons don't know about it. It's kind of in that middle ground. But then, I was like, it's still kind of weird that like tourism completely stopped because of what happened with Ian Adair. Because I was like, I mean, the guy's dead. And as far as anyone knows, there's no threat of anything happening anymore. I mean, there really isn't.
Right.
Even with the real culprits other than Ian behind it, I mean, Kenneth died. And we still have Janet there, but she's not doing anything on her own. She's just, you know, kind of resigned to living her life in loneliness and missing the good old days, so to speak. But she, you know, she's retired.
Right. She's just a quiet widow these days. And yeah.
So I was questioning that too. There was like, well, yeah, those things happened. But I mean, as far as everyone knows, anybody involved in that situation is dead and gone and there's no threat anymore. So why would people be scared to come to the town? It's over. Yeah.
That didn't, and I don't know if maybe it was made that way just to give them a motive to mm-hmm. kind of drive the whole, well, let's make this documentary about it. And Stewart's behind it because, hey, it's going to pick up, you know, tourism. And, you know, maybe they just needed a reason for it to get there. But, you know, there was a whole media frenzy around it. I know that, like you said, you know, Princess Diana's death kind of took over, you know, the front pages. But it seemed like there was a lot of coverage on. I mean, Stewart's mother had this whole archive, you know, to prove, you know, that it was just all over. There was like a whole frenzy about it. But it seemed to, I guess, that once the news had moved on, well, then so did all the visitors. But I don't know. It's still a stunning Scottish town with a dark, murderous history. You know, this is absolutely what people would be talking about on like TripAdvisor or something. Yeah. You know, like, oh, you got to go here. It's got this classic, you know, crime story that's super creepy, and it's also in this beautiful, you know, scenic backdrop, right? I mean, to me, it would have been, you know, already a really popular spot. I mean, it's not uncommon for true crime tourists, you know, often go to bars that murderers have been to. I mean, they talked about Ian Adair drank at that pub like all the time, nearly every night at that one table, right? So, you know, if there's the Jack the Ripper tour where the London's Ten Bells pub, you know, people go to that. They like where Eileen Wuornos was arrested. The it was a biker bar, I think, called The Last Resort. Mm-hmm. You know, so the you know, it's these places are still frequented, you know, today. So it's like, gosh, you know, I would have thought that, you know, they would have, it would have been the opposite anyway. Yeah. But I do think, I don't know, I think they could have went a little deeper to talk about the, you know, I guess the ethics, you know, of traveling to some of these places where, you know, these are real people, you know, that have, you know, been murdered and were victims. And, you know, I don't know, it's, you know, it's not a new thing. True crime is not new. People have been obsessed with true crime since like the 16th century. It's just, it's definitely become more prevalent with our media. So that's, again, a big point of why this, to me, does fit into the Black Mirror, you know, stories, and fits in with others because of like, so this is the technology of today that's being used and how it's consumed and used by people. Because it is so prevalent because of streaming services with the documentaries and with all the podcasts, and, you know, so there's, it's just, I think, more out there than, you know, than what it used to be. And then there's social media too. There's always, you know, TikTok and Instagram, and it's just always out there. So I'm surprised that they didn't go a little further into, the tourism of it. But they just kind of stopped it there at the end where they were there in the pub. But it's definitely been around for a while, as far as you know, these going around to these different sites where, you know, some of those happenings in history and true crime occurred. So, but I was surprised. I was like, I'm surprised it's not already a bit of a tourist site there at the beginning. So that one, I was surprised. What's your next point?
All right. I wanted to talk about closer to the end of the episode. You mentioned the scary moments. And so I want to talk about like maybe the most horror vibe moment of this episode I thought was great is this kind of scene or scenes between Pia and Janet. There at the end. You know, as they're out kind of filming their fabricated new old stories. This sex murder dungeon, the tapes posing as episodes of Bergerac were the only VHS tapes on hand, so they used that for their footage, which leads to Pia making quite the discovery later on while editing, you know? And I thought it was a nice little horror story vibe with that reveal scene and the surrounding situation. You know, the accident in the car puts Davis in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's okay, but, you know, then we have a reason that he's out of the picture for a little bit, and we have Pia and Janet alone at the house when the discovery is made, which just really amps up the tension. It was well played, and I love that. Of course, then she realizes, you know, it's playing, she's watching the tape, and then Janet comes up, Shepherd's Pie? Oh, God, you know, like, she's just there. I will say Pia is terrible at hiding fear. She cannot play it cool. At all, can she?
No, she did not.
Not at all, which then kind of tips off Janet after she walks out then to go upstairs and realize what she had found. But, like, there's just so many tense scenes. You know, they're eating together at that little table, and Pia looks up and sees the mask that she had just watched Janet wearing in the video. And, you know, Janet creepy. Looks back at it, and oh, Ken gave me that. We had such fun together. I'm like, oh. Even now, like, it was all a game to her. You know, Pia's realizing, like, mm-hmm. Janet is not well. She is, like, legitimately a sociopath. Like, there is just this disconnect in her head that she was, like, fun and games, you know? And I just love that they keep amping up this tension and horror to where even Pia gets out and she's on the walk. Janet realizes what's going on. And then it gets back and, you know, Pia's there trying to get cell service. And then the headlights from the car just shining, you know, lighting up behind her. Bravo. It was so good. Chills. You know, I was just like, oh, that's so cool. Definitely the horror moment. And then, you know, her trying to get her in the car and then the tension rises and then Pia's running off and hiding. And then Janet gets out of the car and then she does an impression of me when my internet goes out.
Same.
You come back now. And then so on and so forth with other words and things.
Yes. Very relatable moment.
Yeah.
Not when I'm chasing someone, you know, for their lives, but, you know, yeah, that was kind of a little humorous moment.
So finally that, like, just sweet, you know, everything is fine persona that we'd seen the whole episode just cracks and she realizes that that's it. The game is over. You know, Pia's got, she never knows what happens to Pia. But as far as she knows, well, Pia's going to find Davis and the truth's going to be out anyway. So might as well just lay it all out and call it a day. Right. But man, just, I wanted to shine, you know, shine some light, no, pun not intended, the car headlights. But yeah, just on the tension and everything in those scenes, because it was very well done. Gave a great horror vibe to the episode.
It was. It was a really great moment. Janet had me fooled. I really thought she was just this quiet, you know, country widow. You know, and I just did not see it coming. Now, when they were showing flashbacks later, you know, like you said, that, oh, that's something Kenneth gave me. We had such fun. And when it flashed back to when Davis was filming his mom for the documentary and, you know, she's like, wow, you know, your dad never had any of this. And he's like, well, he wasn't, you know, set up to broadcast. And she's like, oh, can you imagine? It's like, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Right.
When you're like, oh, Jesus. So there were some interesting moments there. I didn't see it at all. I thought she did a fantastic job. I thought all the acting was really great, of course.
Yes.
But she definitely had me fooled. And once that had kind of slipped, like once you knew who she was and what she was capable of, it was like super creepy then seeing her chase after Pia. 'Cause it's like, whoa, you know, she's out there.
Yeah.
And knowing what she's capable of, that was pretty scary. And yeah, it was interesting, this whole disconnect. It's like she was just totally able to, like, compartmentalize everything, you know, and just, like, I don't even think she thought they did anything wrong. She just thought it was great memories with her husband or something. It's
right.
Bizarre. Absolutely that, bizarre.
When she's getting everything together to leave behind for Davis and she's looking through the, like, memento box, her own,
yeah,
you know, box and a wall from you, right? With all the little, like, trophies.
Everybody's got a box. They all have a box.
It was, there's like a diary in there. Dear diary, we murdered the sweetest couple today. but, you know, but she's looking through that and, like, there's, like, the Polaroids of all the different, like, victims that they've had. And she's, like, tearing up and, like, has a smile on her face. Like, it's, like, precious memories, right? It's disturbing. Yeah.
It was. I was quite impressed. Quite impressed with her acting, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of sad because, you know, I feel like it was pretty clear, you know, that Pia died, but did they find her? Like, do they know what happened to her? You know, what she found? Because they did mention, you know, earlier when they were talking about the talking about the stories of the people that disappeared, it was like, well, no one really thought too much of it because, hey, you know, people go hiking or, you know, yeah, they get lost or they fall.
It's like a foreshadowing.
You know.
Yeah, his exact.
Yeah.
I had the quote because he goes, around here, the countryside, it can be dangerous. There's deep water and all that, you know, sometimes people went missing.
Exactly. So it's like, oh, well. Okay, so we see that happened to Pia. You know, she maybe a little clumsy and slipped and or in the water, and then hit her head. And so we see that, but they don't really talk about it at all, which I thought was kind of, I don't know. I didn't like that. I didn't like how they didn't seem to acknowledge her more than just a couple of shots there in the document, at least from what we saw. I mean, I hope that she got some kind of credit or something for her part in what they were able to film for the documentary. But I was like, well, she just kind of got forgotten about a little bit, at least as far as that was concerned. But yeah, great, great tense scenes there. Well, I want to go ahead and talk about some of the criticism this episode, I think, had. I know others have gotten it too, but I've still only seen the first two. So I don't know about the others yet. But, you know, I did see that there was some criticism around this one. And I myself, like I said, I enjoyed it. And I feel like I understand why people feel that way. So, and everyone's certainly entitled, you know, to their opinion as to why they feel that way. But I feel like the point of the episode, the true meaning of the point of the episode was missed. I've heard comments saying that it was predictable, but I think it was intentional. And I'm curious to know what you think as well, because I think that they were kind of taking a jab at themselves with this episode. And the nature of any kind of true crime story that we watch, you know, if you do watch any true crime story, a lot of them are kind of predictable. And I think that was the intent with this episode. And I think that they intentionally followed this linear narrative, you know, and I think it was purposefully done with the twists that were in this episode, like you would see in a true crime documentary, to keep you hooked, right? That's what true crime docs do, and that's what they did here as well. So I think that it was intentional, and I don't know. I thought it was good, because then they, you know, it kind of, when they get towards the end, then it opens your eyes up to like that sensationalist nature, you know, that we're used to seeing with the true crime documentaries as well. Another thing that I, you know, like you mentioned earlier, one of the criticisms was it wasn't futuristic enough or didn't center a lot of technical things, or it wasn't like in a futuristic timeline. Like it seemed to be in today's time. They didn't explicitly say it was like, you know, in the 2020 or 2022 or whenever this was filmed or anything. You know, a lot of Black Mirror episodes are in like a futuristic kind of society, but I don't think it has to be. It's like you said, for what we talked about was, you know, Black Mirror is about people using the technology and how it affects them and, you know, how we interact with it and the consequences, sometimes negative consequences that come from that. So I feel like that's kind of been a theme for Black Mirror, to kind of revolve around those ethical like dilemmas about the misuse of technology. And right now, you know, when we're talking true crime, you know, we know that we have these streaming platforms that turn audiences, you know, into these consumers of real life tragedies. And, you know, so to me, it kind of fit perfectly, you know, with our relationship of modern technology. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I agree fully. Again, I think because this show has done such a great job with taking these fantastical, you know, future technology ideas and what if in a world this could happen, then here's where it could go bad, that people have kind of locked on to, oh, that's what this show's about. But like I mentioned earlier, I don't think that's what this show has ever really been about. Like, it's a big through line, and yeah, like, it's a big hook on a lot of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a social commentary at the center of it all. And it's about when people have certain media or certain outlets or certain technologies, you know, that how they react, like you said, like what's the consequences of human nature when it coincides with these things. And so the technology is, it is, it's not futuristic. It's modern technology, but it's technology. Again, the tapes. It's kind of past technology in a way too. It's like when they're having to digitize these tapes, so then, you know, that's what leads to the discovery, is you're editing and digitizing old tapes. So you're going through those, and that's how you find the reveal, the twist. And then also, but again, it's that social commentary of streaming and you know, being able to stream and binge and talk about true crime documentary series is a social commentary slash modern technology thing.
Right.
So, so I think, yeah, it hits the nail on the head. I mean, that is what Black Mirror is about at the center. So I don't know. Like you said, you know, I don't want to be nice and tell people your opinion is wrong, but I mean, I'm going to be a little less nice. I'm just like, if somebody's complaining that like, this isn't a Black Mirror episode, I hear you and you're wrong. Because that's, you know, like, if you really look at what this show is, then it's exactly what it's about and exactly what this is.
Yeah, I understand it for sure. Yeah, I totally, you know, disagree with that viewpoint, because for me, I was like this, for me, it was a very much a Black Mirror kind of episode. It didn't bother me at all that it wasn't, you know, futuristic or dystopian or, you know, anything like that, that we're used to seeing. You know, I liked the questions that it raises, because it's like, yeah, there's a lot of ethical questions around this glorification of violence. You know, I feel like we have to remember, if you're watching anything for true crime, you have to remember these are real people. Mm-hmm. You know, there were real people with real families. And when these movies or documentaries are made,
and it puts them in a spotlight again, it's like,
absolutely,
I couldn't imagine, like, there are real people who are related to this incident in one way or another. And now they are, overnight, they are a celebrity with people knowing who they are and following them and watching them for all of the wrong reasons, for things that they had no control over, things that they don't want to have any connection to or want to relive, things they would rather just stay in the past and try to move on with their life. And now they're a global celebrity because of something they're trying to, like, move on from.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Right. And it's like Davis was talking about when Pia was, you know, just throwing out this Eggman documentary idea out the window. And she's saying, you know, I really want to do this. And, you know, he's like, no, I'm not interested. And he starts walking away. And she's like, I'm going to do this anyway, with or without you. And he, you know, he gets kind of angry at her. And he's like, you know, talking about how this Ian Adane killed his father, or essentially he's dead because of him, right? I mean, he didn't die from the gunshot wound, but he got MRSA from the hospital recovering from the gunshot wound. So essentially he was responsible, but he's like, that's real. That's not fucking content, right? And
yeah,
that's, you know, exactly what this whole thing ends up becoming. And it really messes Davis up. And
yeah,
you know, it talks, you know, like you said, a good commentary on how these shows can really reopen wounds for families and such. So, you know, there's, I think that's important to remember, you know, as far as like how you take in some of that content, if you're watching these kinds of things, is to, you know, remember that there were real people. And, you know, I think there can be a line there, you know, between trying to watch those kinds of things and then also get, people, I think, can cross a line and kind of sensationalize it at the same time. And then you really kind of see how it just runs away and you have zero control. Like, this is, you know, Davis was credited as, I think, like a director, maybe executive producer. He clearly, he won a BAFTA. He was involved in all of this, but you can see how it's already kind of running away from mm-hmm. him. Like, he has no control because, like you said, they're talking about now making like a series and casting and things like that. And, you know, does he have any say about that? Probably not. You know, mm-hmm. it's so now it's just spinning out of control and he has like zero say about it. And it's just like, he's completely miserable. He's just lost everything. Like, he's lost his girlfriend. He's, you know, lost his mom. Everything he knew about his life is a lie, you know, knowing who his parents were and, you know, being raised by them. You know, I can't imagine, you know, sitting with mm-hmm. that. So I think, you know, that definitely makes it, in my opinion, a Black Mirror kind of story, seeing how that technology is used and how we interact with it and how we consume it.
Yeah.
Do you have another point?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Okay, go right ahead.
Let's see. I want to talk about Janet specifically, kind of her arc, I guess, in a way, through this episode, as and watching her reactions and her interactions. This episode definitely hits different on a second watch.
yeah.
Her facial expressions and body language, they feel different when you know the truth, when you're watching her.
You're right.
Because at first, you know, it's just very awkward. Like, you know, Pia feels like she's putting her foot in her mouth around Janet constantly. She's like speaking poorly of local cops and then forgetting, oh yeah, her husband. And, you know, saying things like the words of, I don't want to picture your mom getting wet about some dude's butt. And it's like, and then she's just like there in the back of the room. It was a nice one. You know, like, it's just like these like awkward little interactions. And then Janet is also like really awkward around Pia. You know, it's just mm-hmm. like, what are you doing this? You know, like not understanding like the things that she's saying. That ditto. She's like, what? You know, and it's just very awkward. And I think I wonder, you know, because they're looking at the Bergerac tapes and stuff when she comes in. There's like there's evidence hiding in plain sight all over the place. Davis is used to seeing it and thinking nothing of it, but now there's somebody else here. Because
who would look?
Here. Yeah.
Who would think to look there? Yeah.
But yeah, but it's now somebody. From the outside with a different, you know, mind and eye for these kind of things is now snooping around the house and looking is like, so then you wonder if her kind of weird, awkward, you know, awkwardness and the way that she interacts with Pia makes more sense. But then what's interesting is she's incredibly on board with the documentary idea.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, she has to know that there's a possibility of her secret being exposed.
I found that really interesting. Yeah, like she didn't seem concerned that someone, not just her son, is nosing around and yeah. asking questions. Yeah.
And so I wonder if like, yeah, this like sociopathic part of her where it was all just a game to her anyway. It was all just like, I don't think she cares. And then her hatred of Ian Adair is so strong. You know, she blames him for the death. And even when you know the like the truth of what happened, it was like, well, you know, Kenny went in there and killed Ian. But then he, you know, shot himself and then everything that happened in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, she still has reason to blame Ian. It's like, well, if Ian wouldn't have gone into the pub and was running his stupid mouth and blabbing about the couple that we just tortured, then Kenny wouldn't have had to go and kill him. And, you know.
Right. Yep.
So she still blames him. And you know, it's a lot of, and so then the things that she says, again, on second watch, it reads so differently whenever she kind of has that moment where she, no, I want you, you know, he took my Kenny from me and you do everything. And then he goes, we were happy before he broke it all, ruined it all. Such a stupid man, just the waste of it. And you realize what she's talking about when you know what's mm-hmm. going on. And
I know.
He put an right. end to all of our fun. We had to let the cops find the dungeon, and we had to stop doing what we were doing because Ian was such an idiot. You know, that's what she was worried about. And mm-hmm. you see that in a different light watching it the second time. You're like, oh, she's just mad because she had to stop doing it.
Twisted.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you mentioned the other lines, which they showed again with like the trailer of the documentary series. But yeah, it's been years since I was in front of any kind of camera at all. Last time, it would have been that old one your dad had. And he didn't have all this. It's like, well, he wasn't filming for broadcast, Mom. Could you imagine? Yeah. Although, in a way, he was filming for broadcast. He just didn't know it at the time. He didn't realize that that broadcast would happen after everyone in the videos was already dead.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then just kind of her end. Very disturbing and sad, but after Pia kind of gets away, you know, she just collects all the evidence and mementos,
mm-hmm.
And everything that she's hidden, and like again, she's smiling fondly at the photos, and there's no remorse. It was just joyful memories. But she leaves it all behind for Davis with that note, dons that mask one last time, and hangs herself. Because I mean, she's not going to face justice for these things. She just has come to peace in terms with, well, the games are over now, so time to go. You know?
Yeah, and she didn't want to be caught or have to like go to jail for it. But yeah, you could tell she really, I think really sealing it was the putting the mask back on.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of always said, yeah, this is who I am. Like there's no shame. Mm-hmm. There's no regret. It's just, you know, my payment is due. You know, I mm-hmm. got away with that for all those years and now the reckoning has come back to me and I'll face it as who I am. All right, then.
Yeah. Yeah, that bizarre. Far, mm-hmm. So far gone. So far gone, I'd have to say. Yeah. Very interesting character, I thought.
Yeah.
She had me fooled.
Yeah, I was wondering. I had kind of a question or thought, I guess. Because that note, that, you know, for your film, Mom. And mm-hmm. at the end, Davis, after he's back in his hotel room after the award, and he just sits there and he's sad and he's looking at that note. He's kept it with him. And do you think that he made the documentary? He still came because he still had opportunity to trash everything, get rid of it, not sign with this whatever, you know, production company, Historic, not sign any deals. He didn't have to go through with it. But do you think that he still made the documentary because of that note? That it was some way maybe making his mom's death mean something?
Hmm. That's a good question. You know, I don't think I thought of that. Like, he could have just... Because it was only himself, Pia, and Stuart, well, and then Stuart's dad, that knew that they were going to make this documentary. Mm-hmm. So if, and then Pia had died. So it would just be him and Stuart and his dad. So if he had decided after he found that stuff that his mom had left him, all the trophies and film, he could have just been like, no, no way. He could have just turned it into the police to kind of, mm-hmm. you know, at least get it out there and get it known. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe. Maybe just let the truth be known.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he thought he was going to be feeling the way, like if he decided to go ahead and move forward with the documentary, because maybe it's what Pia wanted mm-hmm. to, and to maybe honor her in some way, or... I don't think he really wanted the fame, but I think maybe just getting the story out there, but I think maybe regretting that fully mm-hmm. after, yeah. during the orchard. I think he regretted his decision. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I felt almost like, yeah, like you said that he definitely regrets it and he's losing grasp of everything and it's just running. It's becoming its own creature out from under him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wonder, I do think that he went through with it as, I mean, because you know he went home from the hospital and found his mother and found the note and found
these things.
And it's almost like, well, if this was her final, like, you know, act there to do that, then almost, you know, would it have been, you know, against her or whatever if he would have just not gone through with it, you know, that she was,
mm-hmm.
because of that conversation earlier, that she was so... supportive of the whole idea that, you know, maybe part of her wanted even after her death to let the story out and let the truth, you know, that maybe there was this small little modicum of humanity inside her that wanted closure for the victims' families and things like that to like, okay, I'm gone, but now the truth can go out there and let people know what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been some kind of favor to his mom. I think in some, at least some small part, it was.
I think that's a good possibility. Yeah, that's a really good question. I hadn't thought about that. Good stuff. I only have just Easter eggs left, which there were just a few in this episode. Mm-hmm. So if you have more notes then, or any other points, go right ahead.
I always have a lot of thoughts. So I'll see if I can go through it quickly. Not like,
oh, don't worry about
speed
being quick.
Read it too much. But yeah, just the last point was just kind of, which I've thrown some of these things into other points anyway. But yeah, the making of the documentary, again, that's the reason they're there, is to, you know, see his mother as they're nearby, going to be filming this other documentary, which I was kind of with Janet. I was like, yeah, I'm not seeing the immediate appeal of a movie about a guy that watches eggs.
I
don't know if I'm watching that one. I'm not hitting play on that one on streaming.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm passing that one up probably. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So even Pia like decides that that's boring in comparison to what she later learns. And that's why when she hears the whole story and then they go to the place and she's looking at it, that's where she's inspired. You know, she was just settling with the egg guy idea. You know, I kind of like it, but I love this. This is a documentary people will watch. She says, you know, true crime is the hot thing. He's against it at first because of like the closeness to home. If he only knew then how close.
For real.
But, you know, because he's thinking it'd be hard on his mom. Kind of the same, you know, the flip side for the opposite reasons was like, well, I don't want to make her relive all of these things that happened to dad. But Pia, you know, pitches it as, well, we can tell the, what she doesn't know is fabricated, story of Kenny. You know, make him a hero. Make him, you know, that's kind of the pitch she's going at, is let his story be told, his truth be told. Boy, was it ever. They get all the footage and archives and stuff from Stuart's mom's collection. That's where we kind of learn the King family has been affected differently by this. Richard suspects the McCardles. He has no evidence, but... if only he knew the truth lies just beyond John Nettle's gorgeous butt, right? they use Stuart's drone to get some beautiful establishing shots. Which is funny because he mentions the drone and then Pia says something about like, oh yes, spanning establishing shot, one single note on the piano, something like that. And then when the trailer starts at the end of the episode, what happens? You get this widespread of like the Scottish countryside and boom. I was like, that's a nice touch. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, Stuart mentioned it too. He's like, hey, what was the name of that one documentary, right? And they had this beautiful, you know, scenery wherever the location was of this documentary, and it made his relative immediately go book a spot just based on how beautiful it was, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely appealing for this spot, not just to like draw in fans of true crime to want to go visit all of these locations, but just, you know, just for the fact of how beautiful it was. I think Charlie Booker said that about this episode, was that he had said he was watching a true crime documentary and he was like, wow, that is beautiful, because they had all these beautiful scenic shots, and so he googled it and actually went there, not because of the true crime nature of it, just because it looked so beautiful in the documentary. And I just thought that was funny that they kind of slid that in there. So
yeah, that's fine.
So yeah,
I like that. You know, they're told, can you get any new unseen footage, and so they shoot their own new old footage. They're fabricating footage of themselves as the forensics team, like exploring the dungeon.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Stuart brings like the lemon juice and stuff to like to make the UV findings gruesome, but then they don't need them because that place has not been cleaned and there was definitely some very terrible stuff that happened down there.
Ick.
Yeah. And of course I mentioned Richard having no proof, but like we know it's like the whole episode, we're wondering, like, well, why does he suspect the, you know, Kenny and Janet? Why is he? And then we get footage from the documentary in that form of the trailer and we get the little interview with him. And apparently he had gotten wrapped up in some sex play with them on the side and realized how sadistic and kinky they were. And it went a little far, and based off of like stuff that maybe Ian had said and some of the stuff that was coming up, is like, oh, oh, they're the ones that are doing that. I've found out what they do. Yeah. He had put two and two together.
I want to hear more about that. Yeah, and you start to think about him, and so he, you know, it sounds like Stuart's like, oh, well, he's, you know, this is all he does now, right? He just only comes downstairs to get a drink, and he's just kind of drinking himself away. And it, you know, Stuart mentions that his mom's been gone for 4 years. So is he lonely because he's lost his wife and he's kind of just drowning himself in that? Is he feeling guilty because he felt he knew something and he never spoke up? Mm. You know, that he had this suspicion and he's never said anything. And did he just not say anything because he didn't feel he had any proof, that he was only going based off of this experience that he had? And it just really, I think, creeped him out and probably triggered a gut feeling. But I mean, what do you do? I mean, yeah, you don't have any proof. But how weird that would be to be in that same town there with Janet, you know, having the suspicions and mm-hmm. And then just having to kind of live with that. So it kind of brought an interesting light to him, I thought.
Yeah, for sure. And then just like other notes. So there's a couple of foreshadowing thing. We talked about the, you know, the countryside is dangerous foreshadowing. But also, like, one of the first things that Janet says when they pull up at the beginning of the episode about Pia, oh, pretty wee thing you captured.
didn't even pick up on that.
wording, phrasing. But then, yeah, you know, what happened versus what was told. I think we kind of got over that is, you know, Richard hears Ian saying things about the missing woman, and then he threatens to shoot the place up when kicked out. And I'm like, yeah, that probably all happened exactly like that. And Richard sends Kenny to go check on Ian, which, yeah, I'm sure that checks out. But then Kenny, who is the actual culprit and accomplice of Ian, fearing that Ian spilled too much information, probably goes up there and just kills him and his family. Mm-hmm. Pins all of the kidnapping, torture, murder, everything on him alone. But then that ends up having to kind of end their whole operation. He shoots himself in the shoulder to give the story plausible deniability, and then has to let their dungeon be revealed, puts all the blame on Ian, like I said, and then that kind of was the end of their fun and games. So that's where a lot of anger and stuff harbored in Janet, is because her fun was ended, which is, yeah, I get just so disturbing, so crazy.
It was.
Yeah. So that, yeah, that's why she's angry. Let's see. I think I covered pretty much everything else, other than when Davis is in the hospital. He's on his phone playing some Mario Kart Tour on his phone. And it made me remember I used to play that a lot, but I haven't in a long time, so maybe I should get back into it from time to time. It's fun. Mobile Mario Kart's pretty cool.
I've never played at the mobile Mario Kart.
It's not bad. Like, but really, all it made me do is like want to go back on my Switch and then play the other one. So that's kind of the one.
Good old.
But it's
Mario
good,
Kart.
Like when I'm like out and about. Of course, Switch is also out and about, but I don't take it with me that often.
I gotta Tangent. Get you one of those.
But it was just funny when it came up, that little scene. I was like, oh, Mario Kart Tour on the phone. It's a fun
good
game.
Way to pass the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Gosh, I can't imagine if he had been home instead of away, like if he and Pio were in his room and editing and, you know, they're going through what they had filmed for that day, and for him to discover it at that time. I mean, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't get to see his reaction to Richard telling him, because I assume that's what it is, because like Richard says, I don't have any proof, but I always kind of knew. And then he's like, well,
what?
And then he like goes to tell him, and then it cuts to Pia finding the reveal and everything. So we never see how that pans out. So yeah, I don't know how Davis reacted to that. I'm sure he would react like, be like, are you crazy? Like, what are you talking about? That doesn't make And then he would go home to find that everything that Richard told him was true.
Right. Pia's gone. His mom has done that to herself. And then he finds her trophies and videos. And it's just so, it's so twisted knowing who Janet and her husband were and how sadistic and twisted. And then to watch that show Bergerac, which I'd never heard of. I didn't know anything about that. This is the first time I'd heard of that show, but it being a true crime show, like they're mm-hmm. watching a true crime show and then they're committing these atrocities. You know, it's like just bizarre. They're messed up people. I don't know, are they getting ideas from that, or are they just kind of sitting back laughing about it because of what they do? I don't know. So, and yeah, pretty ingenious to be hiding the video evidence amongst that library that they have. Because again, who would even expect to see, or you know, for them to be right there in plain sight like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Just made me think. It's like a couple sitting there watching like CSI or, you know, like watching SVU and being like, "Ooh, jot that one down. We got to try that." You know,
yeah. Like, good idea. You know, like it's so sick. Gosh. Good stuff. Do you have any notes?
Yeah, those were some extra notes that I threw.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So the only thing I have is Easter eggs as well, but I might have some extra ones in you, so I'll let you see what you got, and then.
Well, I'll start, and then you will just we'll tag team it. Okay, I'll go first. One of the first ones that I have was some of the stickers that they had on Davis's laptop.
Yep.
yep. So there were some of them that referred to some previous episodes of Black Mirror. So there was a blue Waldo logo, which mm-hmm. referenced season 2, episode 3, the Waldo moment. There was a black Tuckersoft logo, which references the fictional game developer in Bandersnatch. And there was an eye sticker, which was a reference to season 4, episode 2, Archangel. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the infamous white bear logo from season 2, episode 2, can be seen below that.
Yes.
Love that. I love Easter eggs. I love that they always throw those in there. What's one of your Easter eggs?
I've got one that you might not have because it actually references an episode we haven't got to yet. So I'm not going to give anything away.
Okay.
But yeah, while they are gathering clues about the murders, you know, all of the newspapers and all that stuff through the box, on the front page, there's a story headlined on one of those papers, Smart in Trouble, talking about the politician Michael Smart, who makes his appearance in Demon 79, episode 5 of this season.
Ah, okay.
So won't tell you what the character is, what happens. You got to wait for like stuff on that. But there is a flash forward, a reference to something coming up.
Nice.
That was in there. So I thought that was cool.
Can't wait. Well, one that I have is when Davis and Pierre are meeting with that woman at Historic Productions to talk about their documentary and try to get the funding for that, there was a poster on the wall called The Callow Years that was hanging there. That was a dramatized adaptation about Prime Minister Michael Callow from the series pilot, The National Anthem.
Mm-hmm. And then back to the newspapers again. Another headline, or actually, this is like the news montage at the end, I think, when they're like talking about the documentary and everything, and there's headlines and stuff. On the front page of Scottish Daily Mail, there is a teaser banner with the headline, speaking of the Callow years, "Whatever happened to Michael Callow? Now he runs a zoo."
You just, if you haven't seen National Anthem, you'll just have to go watch it. I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the reference to San Junipero.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool. Definitely a fan favorite and one of my favorites as well. There was something, though, I don't know if you want to call it an Easter egg or not. I don't think it's really considered an Easter egg, but something I thought was interesting in the flashback, like the 90s flashback, when they're kind of showing all of the footage from Lock Henry and all of the media frenzy that was going on, there is a quick shot of a man photographing a castle. That castle was used in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That was the French castle. That they used in Monty Python.
That's funny.
So I thought, hey, a little Monty Python tie in there. So thought that was fun. It's not really an Easter egg, but just a fun little note. That's all that I had. There wasn't as many in this episode as what we had in Jonah's Awful, or the first episode that we covered, but I'm sure there'll be many more as we cover the other episodes. All right. Anything else that you want to say about this episode?
All I got.
All right. I think that's a pretty good place to wrap it up. I'm curious to see what our listeners have to say. I didn't read any of this ahead of time, so I'm curious to see what our listeners thought. Do you want to take the first one?
All right. The first one comes from Wendy. Says, man, shouldn't have watched that one right before bed. Phew, that was a lot to unpack. So exciting to see Daniel Portman and John Hannah. This one was so well done. I figured there was going to be a twist, but didn't see that one coming. And then for Pia to be lost right in the middle, wow. Dark, but incredibly well written and acted. Thanks for your coverage. Excited to be in sync with my favorite dark and twisty pod.
Aw, thanks, Wendy. Yeah, for sure. That I agree. Definitely a mistake to be watching that one in the dark before bed. Emily Rouse says, did Netflix know what the content of these episodes were when they agreed to air Black Mirror? These two episodes seem like a commentary on the voyeuristic nature of so many streaming service documentaries. On the last episode, they exploited a woman's mundanity for viewership and now a man's suffering. It reminded me of the controversy around Netflix's Dahmer docuseries. On a lighter note, I heard a theory about this episode that ties it to the last. Early in the episode, Stuart mentions Netflix by name, but later we hear Streamberry, Netflix's alternative from episode one. The theory is that the beginning of the episode is what really happened, making Ian the only murderer, aka the source a la episode one. But once Davis and Pia meet with the streaming exec, it becomes a fictive level, and Streamberry uses artistic license to make Davis's parents co-conspirators and manipulators of Ian. I can't take credit for this, but I'll be watching subsequent episodes for mentions of Streamberry now. Oh.
It's an interesting theory. I don't think I buy it, but it's an interesting one for sure.
I think it's an interesting theory as well. I don't know. Thanks, Emily. Right.
This one comes from Sarah Saltzman. Says, this one had me on the edge of my seat. It really makes you wonder what's on all those old VHS tapes everyone has lying around. It was also an interesting twist and commentary on the true crime genre that is so popular these days.
Megan O'Connell says, I liked this episode. It didn't feel very Black Mirror, but I like true crime stuff, so I liked it. There was less technology weirdness in this one and a few other episodes this season.
Yep.
I haven't watched the other ones yet, so we'll see.
Hopefully, you know, what I said about, yeah, the technology and social commentary stuff. Sans maybe some of the, you're wrong, I tried to be nice about it, but hopefully you understand it's all in love. Hopefully maybe that'll help the way you view some of this and even some of the future episodes. I have seen all of them, won't say anything. I know when we get to other episodes, I will also be defending and talking about those decisions as well. So don't worry about it.
Can't wait.
The next one comes from Niles, let us know. That's all I always say. It's just, if I butcher the pronunciation, because I'm used to having my own name butchered sometimes in feedback when I first was listening to podcasts, so it happens.
Same.
But Niles, again, let me know. Cords says, I really enjoyed the first half, but I fell overboard in the second half. I saw the twist coming a mile away and found the social commentary done much better in 15 Million Merits. This is probably my least favorite episode, but with Black Mirror, that's still a 7 out of 10 or so.
So still good overall. Interesting. Gosh, I just did not see the twists.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh.
I've heard a lot of people say that they saw it coming or that it was kind of, you know, foreseeable. But yeah, that one, it totally caught me off guard. So at least me and you were like fully surprised by it. They got us.
I mean, I'm glad I was, honestly. Mm-hmm. It just made it more enjoyable for me. Dawn Elizabeth says, I have to admit, I just didn't care for this one. I kept watching and then stopping and going back later. I did try to watch it a second time, but just couldn't do it. Perhaps I had this reaction because I saw the ending coming. I did notice Streamberry thrown in there and wonder if it will be in every episode. I hope I'm not bumming you all out. Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Good. Yeah.
Thanks, Dawn.
Yeah, this show can be, yeah, for different people, varied, different things, you know. Yeah, people take things in differently. All right, we have an email from Daphne, always coming through with these. I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. So let's see what she says. Hi, Ria Mempe. I think we can agree that Streamberry is quite the streaming hub. I'm really enjoying this season of Black Mirror as a whole so far. I know we're only two episodes in, but these first two episodes tie back to the essence of what makes Black Mirror so special. Great acting and production and clever twists and storytelling. Loved having John Hannah in this episode. The twist was awesome. I had a sneaking suspicion that Kenneth was involved, but not Janet, so that was a clever twist. Pia dying without Janet knowing pushed her to make the choice to reveal all. Coming to terms with the horror that his parents were active participants in and changing everything he knew about his childhood was intense and not something you just overcome. Based on his mannerisms at the end, you get the sense that he doesn't know where to go from here. I'm worried for Davis that all of this was too much and that he's going to kill himself. Mm. Looking forward to your thoughts on this one. The night is dark and full of terrors. Daphne. Yes.
Ice reference.
Yes.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I didn't say anything beforehand, but yeah, like that last scene where he's sitting alone in the hotel room, it does kind of, I was like, ooh, where does this go for Davis? Yeah.
I know. You know, he's questioning all his choices at that time. And yeah, he's got to feel so alone. Like I said, he's lost his girlfriend, lost his mom, found out his whole life was a lie. I mean, he could have just, like I said, what if they had made a different decision and just went ahead with the Eggman documentary and he could have just kept believing what he thought to be true, right? About his parents and, yeah, I can't imagine what, dude needs some serious therapy. That's all I'm going to say. Thanks as always, Daphne. So we got another email. Now, this is not related to Black Mirror, but I thought it was very nice and I wanted to just call it out because I you know, just love and appreciate some of the great feedback and things that y'all have to say. So this comes from Laura. She says, Rima, ever since I heard you say that the series finale of 6 Feet Under was one of the best you've ever seen, I've watched the whole series over the last few months. I just finished the last episode and I don't think I've ever cried as much for a series finale. There were 10 minutes left, and I said, what could they possibly do that would be so outstanding? OMG, brilliant. So, 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 so good. And she had a little bit of a spoiler there as what happened in the finale, so I etched that out. So, Pete can't see it because I know you haven't watched yet.
It's still on my list to get to eventually.
Yes. So I'm not gonna say that out loud. So Pake doesn't have to cover his ears. And for anyone who maybe that's listening hasn't seen 6 Feet Under, I took that out. But she goes on and says, sorry, I know I'm 20 years late, LOL, but I just had to let my emotions out and say thank you, Rima. And thank you all to all of the Podcastica hosts. I love you all. Laura from Buffalo, New York. So
thanks,
thank
Laura.
You, Laura. I thought that was really nice. Gives a shout out to all the Podcastica hosts. And Laura, you're so, so welcome. I'm happy that I was able to introduce you to 6 Feet Under if you hadn't seen it before. Again, I always stress to everyone, go watch it if you can, if you're able. It's a fantastic series and a really great series finale. All right. We did get a couple of calls. First call that we have is from our friend Steve Brown. I'm really curious to see what he thought about this one.
Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Hello, Pake and Rima. This is Steve. This is going to be for episode 2 of Black Mirror season. I don't know what it is. Loch Henry. I watched the first episode and listened to your podcast and just absolutely loved it. Annie Murphy is so amazing. I just have one question about that episode. How did Source Joan get the money to open a coffee shop if she's a felon? Maybe a source Annie Murphy helped her. I don't know. I love it. Ditto. Some people just don't know that that means the same thing. All right, I'm going to try not to let this hit me because my dad's passed away. To hear this about his dad, I mean, entirely different circumstances, but still, dead fathers are... Wow. It's a good thing I've got the closed captioning on because half of what this guy in the bar is saying, I wouldn't be able to understand. Pharmacide, are we supposed to chuckle at that? Ooh, that MRSA, that's a bad infection. That's what would kill his dad. Ooh. Okay, that's a little morbid that she wants to go see where his father was killed. Ooh, that sounds like really awkward breakup material there. If you're going to make a documentary about the guy who killed his dad. Oh, Lock Henry, title of the episode, mic drop. Hey, the bartender's father is protesting way too much that it seems like there might be something more to this story than just Ian Adair killed his parents and was a serial killer fucking Hannibal Lecter. Not effing Hannibal Lecter, but like Hannibal Lecter. So they're going to actually go into the house now and film some things. This is not going to be good. The crowbar on whisper mode. Whoa, what did they just rear end? Okay, so now they're just in the hospital. So what was the accident? How severe was it? I'm confused. Oh no, known what? What is the twist that's going to happen here? Oh no, this is young Kenneth and he's with Ian and the honeymoon couple that... Oh no. Oh, and that's the mother now who's... crazy. Oh, and mom's got one of those super high X-Files type beams flashlights they used to use. Oh, now she's getting out her shoebox of evidence, Maurice. Whoa. Oh, dang. She just killed herself, and now what is this? Is this more the documentary? A Streamberry documentary. Lock Henry again. It's a tragic mic drop. Oh, so Pia didn't make it. Oh. I hope there was another post-credit scene because I didn't see it this time. Oh, talk to you later.
Oh, I didn't look for a post-credit scene.
There wasn't one.
Oh, okay.
I think good only deal. The first episode had one.
Ah. That was great as always, Steve. Thank you for that. And I'm sorry about your dad. I'm sorry. And... going back to Joan is awful. I don't know how she got the money for her coffee shop.
That's a good question to think about. I think, yeah, Steve, you might have nailed it. Those maybe Annie Murphy. Annie Murphy helped her out.
Yeah. It's great.
That Schitt's Creek money.
Yeah. So we got another voice message from our good friend Lucy. Really interested to hear what Lucy has to say as she is from Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what she has to say.
Hi, strange indeed, Pete Grima. It's long time listener, first time caller, Lucy here, to give some feedback on Black Mirror Season 6, Episode 2, Loch Henry. Consider me your Scottish correspondent. I absolutely loved this episode for various reasons. One of the hardest things about being from Scotland is that everyone sort of assumes you know everyone and that, you know, you've been everywhere and it's a really small country. And that, you know, it really pisses me off. But then episodes like this happen and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that place. I know that person. I know this stuff. You know, obviously not the horrible kidnapping and murdering, but I thought I would share what I liked about the episode and some of my sort of tangential anecdotes to why I enjoyed Loch Henry so much. First of all, where this is filmed primarily is a town called Inverary, which is on the banks of Loch Fyne, a really beautiful part of the world, and somewhere that almost everyone who lives in Scotland, particularly those who live near Glasgow, will have been to for a lovely day out. So it was very interesting to see the kind of black and white buildings of Inverary through a new light. One of the other things I really loved about this episode was, of course, Daniel Portman, Pod from Game of Thrones, back on our screens in his natural accent. But more than that, I also loved... Sorry, I'm just sitting down if you're hearing creaking. I also loved seeing Samuel Clemens as Davis. So Samuel was the second London cast of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. He played Scorpius Malfoy. He was absolutely phenomenal in that role. And I got the pleasure of talking to him outside stage door when I went to see it, and he was just adorable. He looks a lot older in this episode, but in a very good kind of creepy character actor way. And I'm just so excited to see what he does next, because those moments at the end where he just is sitting in silence and horror were just so perfect. Also, let's give him credit. His Scottish accent was actually really good. Wish I could say the same for the woman who played his mum. We're veering a little bit into sort of Welsh 1950s territory there at times, but she was also very creepy in her performance, so we'll forgive her that. So, yeah, those were the kind of superficial things I loved about it. I am a true crime person, or at least I have been. I don't know how I feel about it now. I'm watching this and seeing Pia just be the worst at times. Like, Pia is not the villain of the story per se, but the decisions she makes and the way that she pushes and views things are troubling. And it was hard because I just wasn't really rooting for anyone in this story, except maybe Davis, who, you know, at the end of the day is just left there. I found the ending really kind of thoughtful. I kind of thought we might see him either take his own life the way that his mother did, or maybe something like a creepy smile, like he knew it was there all along, but somehow being there with the emptiness was just typical bleak Black Mirror. I would say don't let this put you off visiting Scotland. We're a really nice bunch, fairness part of the world. I promise most of us won't kidnap you and kill you in our basements. Speaking for myself here, others' mileage may vary. But genuinely can't wait to hear you talk about this episode. I thought it was absolutely stellar. Slightly underused John Hannah is all I'll say. I would have liked to have seen more of him, but I loved it. I really, really loved it. Thank you so much for all that you do and for breaking down these episodes. It was so good to meet you both in San Francisco last year, and I'm really enjoying listening to your coverage of this. So sending lots of love from the UK. Bye, everyone.
Oh, lots of love right back to you, Lucy.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, I knew that was going to be good. Oh. And she's been there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be probably even more gorgeous in person, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to visit a lot of those areas eventually, someday.
I've always wanted to go to Scotland. Whether or not the threat of being kidnapped and tortured or not, I guess it'd be worth it to get to see the beautiful landscape. It just looks glorious.
Yes.
So that's awesome. Thank you so much, Lucy, for chiming in. Really appreciate your thoughts firsthand there. And thank you for everyone for writing in, leaving voicemails, feedback on our Facebook posts and emails. Keep them coming. We love to hear what y'all think. Well, next week, we hope that you join us for season 6, episode 3 of Black Mirror titled Beyond the Sea.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing. Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely. Well, I'm excited. I don't know anything about, I mean, I've seen the poster, you know, they made like movie posters of all the episodes.
Yeah.
And I've seen the movie poster. I don't know anything about the episode. I do know Aaron Paul is in it, and I really mm-hmm. love Aaron Paul. So I'm really excited to see him.
Yeah. It is the longest of this season.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yes. Not by like a whole lot, but I think it comes in about like an hour 16. Something like that.
Oh,
maybe.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that is a little longer than most of them then. Well, then it must have quite the story to tell then, I guess. They feel
yeah.
it. They need to go that long. Okay. All right. I know you've seen it. I know you've seen it. You can't say anything.
I'm excited to get back into it. Watch that one again.
Good.
Maybe.
Well, that's good. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
It'll be fun. Yeah, well, if you would like to write in, leave us a message, some feedback, voicemails, whatever you got for next week's episode, or for this one, if you didn't get it in, or any other,
Absolutely.
You can always hit us up on our Facebook page for all of the different episodes, and you can find any contact information you need over at podcastica.com.
Yeah, and while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows, like Run for Your Lives with Daphne and Paik. What are y'all doing this week?
We are taking it back to the 80s, early 80s, with a cult classic, An American Werewolf in London. It's quite a fun one. We had a blast with that one for sure. So can't wait to release that Friday.
I love that movie so much. Mm-hmm. Classic. Absolutely classic. Yeah. Well, y'all picked a good one. I'll say that.
It's a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah. That'll be great. I can't wait to listen to that one.
Mm. Lots of fun stuff going on Podcastica. From has wrapped season two, but Alex and Lizzie still putting out some kind of overview of the season, interviews with different cast members and stuff still. So always working, and I think they've got some fun stuff in the downtime between seasons planned that I don't even know what it is yet.
They've always got stuff going on. They just keep it going. I love it. I love it.
So yeah, so definitely check that out if you're a fan. And then Walking Dead, Dead City is on right now. So on the cast of us, Ben and different hosts covering that. Yep. Lucy, that we just heard from, was on episode two. So go check out the coverage over there as well.
Yeah, Ben always does a fantastic job, and he's had a really great round table of guests so far. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of interesting conversation around that show.
Yeah, so check out all the shows over on Podcastica. Something over there will catch your fancy, especially if you're listening to this one right now, and show the love to the ones that you do love, including here. Follow, subscribe, whatever you do on your podcast player of choice. Give us ratings, reviews, positive only, please. Or if you hate the show, give us a scathing review, but make it 5 stars, and then it's fine.
we'll forgive you.
Yeah. As long as it's 5 stars, you can write anything you want. just give us the review. We appreciate any and all feedback, absolutely. But for now, that is our show this week. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Until next time, I'm Rima.
And I'm Paik.
And Laura from Buffalo is strange indeed.